question is being raised with regard to one's attachment to the land of Israel, the Eretz Israel. Many people today do feel a tremendous identification or attachment, concern about Israel, though not necessarily to the point where they feel they have to live there. The majority of Jews in America today, especially those who participate in some type of religious level, whatever, embrace Israel, and even secular Jews embrace Israel. The question is being raised, what is the reason for the attachment to Israel? Why should a person be concerned about Israel, or why should a person even live in Israel? What is the value behind it? It has to be pointed out that nobody really asks these kinds of questions, because you're dealing with something which is a very powerful emotion. And when things are powerful emotion, emotionally compelling attitudes, then it's kind of accepted. You can't question it rationally. When that's the case, one should be a little bit suspicious, because you find that the emotional attachment and support of Israel takes place among people that aren't really that interested in anything else about Judaism or even about Torah. People that have very little connection with Torah, with mitzvos, still can be ardent Zionists. The truth of the matter is that the nation itself was not established because of anything to do with Judaism. It had nothing to do with Judaism. It was Zionism. Zionism was a political movement, a nationalistic phenomenon among Jews who were essentially secular. There was debate among the rabbis, but my sense is the State of Israel emerged today because of nationalism, not because of Judaism. The overwhelming majority of the great rabbis were essentially opposed to Zionism, to engaging in this endeavor to break out of the exile and to create a state, and so on and so forth. I'm not going into all the issues, because to a large extent, it's not that relevant at this point. Now the state exists, and once it exists, it doesn't matter why it came into existence. One's obligation to support Israel, because Jews live there, it's the most significant community of Jews in the world, for that alone, so one is obligated to support it. It doesn't matter at this point why, whether it should have been brought into existence or not. So that's why that debate can be approached theoretically. You want to understand what were the issues. That's fine. But it doesn't translate into practical decision as to what you should do now. This point was made by Rav Henkin, Zichrono Livracha. In his essays, he says that he was among that camp that was opposed to Zionism. But now that the state exists, and it's a place where Jews live, and it's a haven for Jews, and it's surrounded by enemies, and it's a place where Jews can learn Torah, and so forth, one is obligated to completely support it. That's why he was opposed to that faction, essentially the Naturei Karta, the extreme faction, that are absolutely opposed to it, and hold that it shouldn't exist, to the extent where they join forces with people like Arafat to undermine the State of Israel. He held that as an absolute sin, and one who engages in any kind of an activity that undermines or weakens Israel, it's a tantamount to Ritzicha, to indirectly bringing about great harm to Israel. So that's why I'm saying that, in a sense, the most important thing that one can say about Israel is that it exists. It would be akin to a situation where many times children come into the world that were unwanted or unintended, by accident, so to speak. For a parent to not give their full support to the child, and when questioned would say, well, I really didn't want this child in the first place, everybody would regard that as being absurd. The responsibility that one has is not based upon whether you wanted it or didn't want it, or the circumstances. It's your child. The fact that it's your child creates the responsibility. So the most important thing is that it's your child and it exists. I'm using that analogy to help us understand the approach to Israel, that all people should feel an obligation to support Israel, whether they were in favor of such a thing at the outset or not, is irrelevant at this point in time. And support not just in terms of the physical support, material support, but more significant is support in terms of what is Israel? What does it stand for? What is the purpose of Israel? That's a question that not many people think about. And the reason that people don't think about it is because the idea of Israel is very compelling to people on an emotional level. Instinctively, they feel a tremendous identification with Israel. Not necessarily because objectively what Israel is doing, simply because there's a very powerful emotion in people to identify with your own group, the group ego, so to speak. Nationalism is a very powerful force. Patriotism. So therefore, when every group feels this, if there's an Italian superstar in a sport, and he makes it clear that he's Italian, so of course he's going to get the support of all the Italian people. And then the same is true for any ethnic group. Jews have the same thing. In general, we don't have that many great heroes in the world of sports. But other areas, or even in sports, if there's a great Jewish pitcher, Sandy Koufax is a great Jewish pitcher, so that evokes the same pride. That's the idea of nationalism, that people automatically identify with the group. It's an extension of the personal ego. It's a personal thing. And that's why if Israel achieves a mighty victory and Israel is praised as a great army, everybody feels a tremendous sense of pride. It makes you feel better because you're part of that. And contrarily, when bad things happen, you feel hurt because it's an association. It's an ego thing. Now, I'm not saying that in and of itself that it doesn't have to be a bad thing, whatever, it's a natural thing, but one shouldn't believe that that's the sum total of the whole connection to Israel is based upon the same phenomenon which connects an American to America or a Frenchman to France. Judaism does not elevate that to any type of a value. That idea then, that nationalism, my country, and so on, that, in my opinion, is not a value of Judaism. We don't cultivate that kind of thing. We don't feel that there's anything special or unique or necessarily positive about it. Bear in mind that that phenomenon can be extremely dangerous. Essentially, most of the wars of history are fought over those types of things. And that emotion can compel people to follow their leaders blindly just because it's their country. That is not the idea of Judaism. Our connection to the Jewish people is very, very significant. It's very, very important. The connection to the Jewish people is because of the unique role that the Jews are to play with regard to Torah. It's the whole idea of Torah is to create a unique kind of a people. Mamlechet Kohanim, kingdom of priests, as it's translated. V'goy Kadosh, it's a holy nation. One cannot truly experience the ultimate connection to Klal Yisrael unless they recognize the idea of a holy nation and are positively attached to the ideal of a holy nation. But simply because it's your people, that is to say your connection to Israel, is an accident because you were born Jewish. It's just an accident. And had you been born a French, you'd be connected to France in the same way. That accident of birth is not the factor which constitutes the real value of the love of the Jewish people. Thus, there is a serious question when you talk about living in Eretz Yisrael, or the significance of Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. The question is, what is the purpose? What is the value over here? What is the benefit? I believe that all things being equal, one should strive to live in Israel. That living in Israel is very important. Chazal speak about the significance of the land of Israel to the extent, and it's based upon a quote from David HaMelech when he was forced to leave Israel, and he compares that to idolatry. So to speak, when you leave Israel, it's like you're telling a person to go worship idols. That's the standpoint from which we have to approach the issue. Of course, the question is, what's the reason for that? Why is living outside of Israel compared to idolatry? And what is it about living in Israel that would be the opposite? Wouldn't that be dependent upon the person per se? That is, one can live in Israel in places that are completely secular. And one can live outside of Israel in places where, communities where everybody believes in Torah. So then the question would be, what is there about Israel per se? It would seem that significance, the Rambam says, a person should always seek to live in a community with the proper values and should avoid communities with improper values. So it makes sense to say that you should always seek to live in a place which represents the highest level of Torah observance in the most appropriate way on every level, ethically, morally, philosophically, and avoid places where people don't recognize these values. But that's quite different than saying Israel per se. That would depend. If Israel is the place, then Israel. But if Israel is not the place, then why Israel? I'm maintaining that there is a separate idea. There is an element of extreme importance. Eretz Israel per se, just Eretz Israel per se, has tremendous significance. The Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, the holiness of Eretz Yisrael, in my opinion, has to do with the fact that this land was designated by the Creator, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to form a specific society, a society which is based upon implementing the principles that God has taught to us, so to speak, to imitate the ways of God in every aspect of personal and national life. That when a person recognizes that idea, the uniqueness of Eretz Israel, that it was designated for a society which would live a way of life which would be completely different and would manifest the existence of the Creator and the presence of the Creator. When a person realizes that, then the mere fact that you're in that place, this place itself connects you to the Creator and to the goal that He had for this place. Then, for example, you go to the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, to the graves of the patriarchs, the Avos, the fathers and the mothers. And of course, you have to understand why that was such a matter of great importance in the first place. You see the extent to which they went to acquire the land and to be buried there. And Yaakov makes his sons take an oath that they won't leave him in Egypt. They'll bring him back and they would bury him there. It has eternal value because these ideals that ought to be the basis of the society were first discovered and implemented by the Avos, by Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So of course it's possible for a person to accept the Torah, to follow the Torah, and to implement the Torah any place. Any place. That doesn't have to be only in Eretz Yisrael. B'chol makom asher aski ashmi. Any place where you mention my name, God says, I'll come to you and bless you. However, given that we are human beings, and given that we have emotions, there's something concrete that makes an impact on the emotions when you're there, when you're physically present in the place, and you see the kever, the grave of Avram and Yitzchak, and then it brings to life that they actually lived this way of life, and it gives you a completely different relationship to the ideas that they represent and to the idea that God related to them, and that's where the whole idea of the land comes from, because of the Avos. So therefore, when you read about these things from the standpoint of America, and of course it depends upon different individuals, their level, to a certain extent, it's in the abstract. The culture doesn't reflect these ideas. You're in a completely alien culture. That's the avodah zarah. That's the idolatry. The idolatry doesn't necessarily mean bowing down to idols. It means a completely false philosophy of life, value system. So the very nature of any other society is rooted in false ideas, in human fantasies, materialistic pursuits, hedonistic pursuits. Other religions permeate the culture, Christianity, Islam. In that sense, you're steeped in a society which is rooted in idolatry and false ideas. So it's very, very difficult for the individual. He's got to fight that off. Not to say that people don't reach a very high level, can reach a high level. The most important element in one's perfection is how you work on yourself, is how you exercise your free will, your bechira. There's no place that can do it for you. Unfortunately, people relate to things in Judaism and they make them into magical pills that can somehow transform you. If I was only living in Israel, then everything would be different. People are looking for that. So when they have these desires, they'll take anything in the religion and they'll make it into a panacea. The mezuzah becomes a magical object that protects you somehow. It's a falsification of what Judaism is about. And the same is true with Eretz Yisrael. You can't tell me that just to take anybody and put him in Eretz Yisrael and all of a sudden he's on a higher plane. Doesn't make sense. It's not true. Nothing works like that in Judaism. It's all dependent upon the way the person utilizes his own bechira, his own choice. If that is the case, then the question is, are certain places or situations more conducive to the goal? The circumstances that you live in, the situation, the neighborhood, are important because they have an effect upon you. They impact upon you. And that's why the Rambam said that we should always seek to live in the surroundings of perfected people, of good people. And we always have to avoid living among wicked people because they will affect us. However, there's a difference between the negative effect of bad people and the positive effect of good people. It's not the same thing. That is to say, it's more of a danger, more likely to have negative effects, to put yourself in an environment of bad people than it is to have positive effects by putting yourself in an environment of good people. Although both are true. It is true that one should seek to be in the company of good people because one can learn from them. It is also true that one should avoid bad people because one can learn from them, but it's not identical, in my opinion. Because it's much easier to learn from bad people, easier. Because that just has a natural effect on your emotions. We all have the same emotions. And we're affected by the fact that other people are not inhibited from doing the things that we may be shy to do, we may be afraid to do. Thus, when you come in company of others and that becomes the norm, it becomes acceptable, so that has an effect upon you. And the attitude is, well, everybody's doing it. So if they're doing it, I can do the same thing. And you feel a certain security in the fact that everybody's doing it. That comes about much easier. It's easier to slide into a negative, wrongful, or sinful form of behavior than it is to pull yourself out and to raise yourself to a higher level, because then you're going against your emotions and you have to utilize your bechira. Goodness does not happen naturally. It happens through effort. So therefore it's very good to have positive role models, but positive role models are not enough. Because unless you make the effort to learn from them and to implement and to work on yourself and to go against your emotions, then all the positive role models in the world won't help. Nobody could do it for you. That's the concept of bechira, of free will. That being the case, there is no question that even if one goes to Israel, there's no automatic benefit. It's not mystical. It's not magical. And indeed, one can find oneself, can happen, that a person was on a higher level when they were living in America. Let's assume they were living in a very good community, environment, and they had all the things they needed. And it could happen that they go to Israel and go to a lower level. In reality, that can happen. There's no absolute guarantee. Let's say they find themselves with the wrong group of people in Israel, or in a different kind of a community, in which they're subject to negative influences, and they slide. Nothing is structured in Judaism to effectuate automatic perfection. Thus, I say that all things being equal, if a person has the proper foundation, the correct approach, the right goals of improving himself in accordance with the Torah, then the fact that one lives in Israel, of course one would have to be in a good community, but we're just abstracting the land of Israel itself. The holiness of the land itself is a very significant factor, because every day he's confronting these realities that he can simply forget about. Every day he may see the Kotel, he may see other things that are reminders that everything he reads in the Torah actually happened over here. And it becomes more real for him. And thus, it is easier to establish a way of life which is based upon the reality of everything that he reads about in the Torah. However, to elevate the land of Israel, or the state of Israel, the Medina of Israel, the state of Israel, into a supreme value, where it is not related to the goals of Torah, in my opinion, that's not a value, it's not a positive value, and it can have negative consequences. The nationalistic phenomenon, that is to say that those Jews who relate to the state of Israel in a purely nationalistic sense, no different than a Frenchman would relate to France, that is not, in my opinion, a Torah concept. That is taking the Jews in a completely different direction. That's not the direction of Torah. Because once you become nationalistic, every nationalism partakes of certain desires to magnify yourself, to become known in the world, to have a great army and a great culture and a theater and a host of things. Those are the values that come with nationalism. Nationalism comes with a whole host of values. That's not Torah. Torah has nothing to do with nationalism. Our idea of nationalism is different. Yeah, the nation, Kadosh, a holy nation. That's a completely different phenomenon, because a holy nation is not nationalistic. A holy nation is very, very humble. Does not glorify itself at all. Nationalism is glorification. A holy nation is the opposite. It's to be humble. To recognize that our whole purpose is to study the Torah and to implement it. And to recognize that the only true greatness is the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the greatness of God. And that's our whole purpose, is to sanctify God, which is the exact opposite of nationalism. Another reason for going to Israel today, for those who can do it, would be to contribute to building up a certain type of an image of a true Torah personality, whom others, that is to say the non-religious, can respect and identify with. That is, someone who's educated, who serves in the army, who contributes to the state, who reaches out to fellow Jews, and is able to explain the deeper ideas of Judaism in a manner which is pleasing, which makes sense, which gains the respect of Israelis, to be part of that movement of enabling the ordinary Israelis to recognize the greatness of Torah. So those people who go to Israel with that purpose in mind, to whatever little extent you contribute to that, that is a great, great mitzvah.